In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints over Pacifica Radio. Britain's Tribune magazine has called our good friend Greg Palast the greatest investigative reporter of our time. Greg is the author, most recently, of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and as I say, he works for the BBC and writes for The Guardian of London. He joins us now from New York City. Greg, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Glad to be back. Actually, I'm not trying to be the greatest investigative reporter, but the most annoying investigative reporter.
Well, we like you just the way you are. I want to tell people we're excited. You're going to be coming to town on the 26th. We'll tell people more about that later, but we're looking forward to seeing you, and we're delighted to have you with us now.
It would be terrific.
Well, Greg, let's start with an interesting story you've been working on that sort of pushes the envelope regarding the Bush family connection to Al-Qaeda. Could you talk about that?
Let's go back to a story that I ran at the top of the BBC television nightly news, Newsnight, and in The Guardian, which was basically blacked out throughout the United States, even though it ran in the rest of the world. And that is that intelligence agents in the United States, CIA, FBI, et cetera, told BBC and my team that they were not permitted before September 11th to investigate Saudi Arabian financing of Al-Qaeda and terrorist organizations. Very specifically, for example, and including certain members of the bin Laden family residing in America, you know, working with and running what the FBI considered terrorist fronts. They were told, don't go there. Now, of course, the question is why, and I want to make very clear, BBC has no information that, you know, George Bush planned September 11th attack or knew about it in advance and wouldn't do anything about it. No one has said anything like that to us. But we do have this, you can't bug our Saudi friends. And one of the questions is why? And what we keep getting back from the experts in the field is that Bush has accepted the State Department line. You can't bug the Saudis, and that may have come from a certain prejudice, which is that the Saudis provided his family, and specific George W., millions of dollars of financing to save their oil businesses when they were going down the tubes. And so if you have people who have saved your family's jewels and made you a billionaire, you're probably less likely to unleash the FBI on them, even when the evidence for investigation is staring you in the face.
Now, we're talking about the Saudis who funded, with some amount of money, the weapons of mass destruction program in Iraq during the 70s and the 80s.
Well, if you read my book, you'd find that out. Yeah, what happened is that how do we know that Saddam Hussein has WDMs, that's a new term which I hadn't heard until this year, weapons of mass destruction, you know, things that'll kill a lot of people all at once. How do we know that? And the answer is because the United States government gave a wink and a nod to the Saudi Arabian government to provide $7 billion to Saddam Hussein.
$7 billion.
$7 billion with a B. You know, this is like a Carl Sagan show. $7 billion. Billions and billions of dollars to Saddam Hussein to build a bomb. Now, we did that. If you remember, we had a vice president named George Bush Sr. We did that because Saddam was going to vaporize those meanies, the Iranians. So when he was going to use the weapons to mass destroy the Iranians who were annoying us at that time, we let that happen. So the answer is, how do we know Saddam has parts for bombs? Because we provided that them to him through the Saudis.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the first war and what might be the reasons for this war. The United States always claimed that was a massive victory, that the U.S. won with the least amount of casualties in the history of modern warfare. Who do you think won that war?
Going back to the book, Fall of the Money, I would say if the victory goes to Chevron Oil. If you remember, we were told in 1991 that we were going to restore the democracy of Kuwait. And what we have now in Kuwait is a dictatorship. Every bit and every inch as brutal as Saddam Hussein could dream of. In fact, with even more lockdown control. So the promised democracy in Kuwait has not been mentioned by Bush Pair or Bush Feast since the elections and since the first Gulf War. However, right after the war was over and Daddy Bush was disinvited from the White House by the American electorate, he went to basically, I was going to say he went to work for Chevron. I should say he lobbied for Chevron, writing a letter to the Kuwaiti dictators or the sheikhs in Kuwait, asking them to give Chevron Oil a special oil concession, which apparently they did. And now Bush Sr. says correctly that he never received a dime from Chevron for doing this favor for the oil company and calling in his chips for saving the Rolls Royces of the Kuwaiti sheikhs. However, what Bush has not mentioned is that then Chevron dumped over $500,000 into the Republican Party war chest to elect his son president. So if there was a clear winner in the last war, it was Chevron Oil. So if you want to know, and maybe the Republican National Committee Treasury would be a close second. So if you want to know who's going to win the upcoming war, you have to look at the winners of the last one.
We're speaking with Greg Palast. His book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, is about to be re-released, updated, a terrific piece of work about, among other things, the stealing of the 2000 election. And this book is crucial if you want to pay attention to what's going to happen in the next election. Greg, I want to talk to you a little bit more about oil and the war for oil. You have been covering very closely in a very interesting way what's been going on in Venezuela. And I want to inform the question a little bit more by just saying this about the media. Every time you raise the issue of oil and suggest that perhaps the Bush administration is going to war for oil, they laugh at you, they call you a conspiracy theorist. And when we talk about the situation in Venezuela and we raise the issue that maybe the United States has been fiddling in there to control the flow of oil out of Venezuela, the same thing happens. Could you talk about that?
Well, you know, it's one of the great tragedies. Actually, I have to say I got a note from a CBS television producer yesterday saying that after seeing my BBC reports on Venezuela, I actually went down to Caracas. I interviewed President Chavez and the people who kidnapped him, by the way, so both sides of the Venezuela story. But I got the CBS reporter said to me, I read your stuff and watched your stuff on Venezuela, and we have to admit that in the U.S. we completely missed the story. Well, missing it is not the word, really. It's bound and gagged. The U.S. press has completely taken the line of the U.S. State Department that Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, is an unpopular dictatorial autocrat. The terms dictator, autocrat, unpopular come up over and over again. They come out of U.S. State Department press releases. You see it in the New York Times. And without exception, the big papers, the big media, and that means excluding Pacifica, which is the fighting people's media. But big media has decided to basically try to, participate in the removal of an elected president in Venezuela. But why Venezuela? And the answer is, where is the big pool of untapped oil that could keep the world price of oil down if we invade Iraq and those fields are on fire? The answer is Venezuela. In 1973, the oil embargo by the Arab states was smashed by Venezuela ramping up oil production. It is the swing member of OPEC. Hugo Chavez, whom they're trying to remove, had been what's called the president of the OPEC conference. So he was the guy really running OPEC. The head of his state oil company, Ali Rodriguez, was, in fact, the secretary general of OPEC. So if Venezuela is the key player within OPEC, so why are we trying to seize control of the Venezuelan government? Well, what does Venezuela control? OPEC.
Talk a little bit more about the way in which the media responded to this and has also failed to even mention the word oil and a war for oil in the context of covering the war in Iraq.
Well, I have to say there is one exception. Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, who's pro-war, says, hey, it is about oil. Why don't we just fess up and say that we don't want Saddam to have the oil, that we feel better if George Bush has the oil. So at least there's been kind of one confessional statement. I'm sure Tom feels better having gotten it off his chest. You know, look, we are under attack. There has been a fatwa issued against all American citizens anywhere in the world by an organization called Al-Qaeda. The problem is that we are under attack, but it's not by a guy named Saddam Hussein, no matter how creepy, evil, murderous, and mendacious the character is. He hasn't attacked Los Angeles, and he didn't attack New York. So because George Bush cannot face down a real threat. We are given the answer to where is Osama. The answer we're given is we have to remove Saddam Hussein. And so it's the old, you know, you go, I'm here in New York, you go up to 42nd Street, you get the three-card Monty players, you know, and they just make you watch, you have to pick out the right card, they make you watch the wrong card, so every time you ask about Osama, the answer is Saddam. This is a very dangerous thing. Why won't they go after Saddam, and why aren't we asking the right questions? I'm very concerned because, as you know, I did break that story about the limits on intelligence gathering about Saudi financing of terror. Why? The answer is which Saudis and how are they financing them? And I just got calls from France, from Paris, confirming one of the most important intelligence concerns that we've had in our investigation. That is a meeting in Paris in June of 1999 when the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia were blown up. And at BBC, we've been investigating this because that was a turning point in which there was a meeting in Paris in which major Saudi Arabian financiers, arms dealers, and the financial operatives for Al-Qaeda met about the funding for several organizations, including Al-Qaeda and their operations. And that's why Al-Qaeda is alive. Why aren't we investigating that meeting? I can tell you that French intelligence knows all about that meeting. I can tell you that our intelligence people know all about that meeting. Why isn't that turning point in the funding of Al-Qaeda and bringing them back to life after Saddam Hussein was after Osama bin Laden? Hey, I'm doing the Bush thing. I'm mixing Osama and Saddam. Why didn't they investigate this meeting which restored Osama's financial power? And the answer is maybe who was at that meeting.
Well, talk about that, please.
And what I've just confirmed today, and I don't want to use any names right now because the BBC would come and break my thumbs for revealing this at this minute, but for Pacifica and activist stations which are listening, it includes people who are financially very close to the Bush family. Now, people who have been deeply involved in the oil business of the Bushes. Now, I have to say, I want to give one more warning. This does not mean that George Bush and his partners wrote a check to Al-Qaeda and says, please attack New York. None of that. We're talking about the fact that Bush is uncomfortable investigating his partners who provided the money to allow and permit the attack on the United States. They probably didn't know any of the specific plans. My understanding is the purpose of the meeting was not to plan attacks against the United States, but to pay off Al-Qaeda so they would not mount further attacks within Saudi Arabia. For those who remember, the Khobar Towers were blown up in 1996, and there were 19 U.S. servicemen stationed there, and they were killed. So the Saudis said, no more bombs in Saudi Arabia, here's a check. The problem is you can't investigate Al-Qaeda unless you follow the money. It's investigation rule number one, and the information I'm receiving today begins to put together the picture about why we can't investigate, because it's who we would have to investigate, and that is business partners of Bush family.
And that's an excerpt from a very compelling interview I just did with Greg Palast. We'll tell you how to get the entire interview in a moment. In Berkeley, I am Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.